The following show has paid WGCH a broadcasting fee, and the opinions expressed during the show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
It is 9:02 on 1490 WGCH, WGCH.com anywhere. I'm Tony Savino, and it is the first Thursday of the month. That means it's time for Spotlight on Medicine. It's the month of February. That's Heart Health Month. And my guest this morning is the Chief of Cardiology at Greenwich Hospital, Dr. Christopher Howes, talking about heart health. He's also an associate professor of medicine at Yale School of Medicine, attending physician at Yale New Haven Hospital's Cardiac Catheterization Lab. He's dedicated his career to the care of patients with cardiovascular illness and cardiovascular wellness for prevention for adults. And we welcome Dr. Howes back. Good morning.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
Good seeing you. All right. So let's get right to it. What do we know about the causes or risk factors of heart diseases?
Well, you know, that's a well-established story. We've done demographic studies of large populations of people and found that there are identifiable risk factors. They're very familiar to most people: high blood pressure, high cholesterol, tobacco use, family history, diabetes. These are all kind of classic risk factors, and we look at these in each individual to try to gauge someone's risk. There are other evolving risk factors. As we move forward, we find out things like another lipid called lipoprotein little a is now identified as a powerful risk factor for cardiovascular disease. So there's some old stories and new stories, and we're moving forward.
Yeah, I guess always evolving, right? Finding things and maybe things that you thought were bad or maybe not.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, not maybe totally germane to this topic, but you know, the story about alcohol is changing a lot. And you know, I think 25 years ago we told everybody to have two glasses of wine. I think that was maybe not really great advice, and in moderation for alcohol consumption certainly seems to make sense.
All right. I mean, one of the things I've always thought was interesting about February is that it's Heart Month, but yet it's Valentine's Day with a lot of chocolate being eaten, right?
So that may not be totally coincidental. And chocolate is a funny story. You know, dark chocolate with low concentration of saturated fat and sugar is actually supposed to have some antioxidant properties that are good for your nutrition. It's the milk chocolate that I think people really kind of prefer that is really high in sugar and in fat and probably isn't really a great dietary supplement. Mm-hmm.
It may taste better. All right. So what are the most common diseases that you see?
So, you know, by far and away, even with all the successes we've had in medicine and in cardiovascular illness, hardening of the arteries or atherosclerosis is still exceedingly common. About half the population will have some degree of hardening of the arteries as they get older. And even with all the success we've had treating and preventing cardiovascular illness, half the people in the United States will still die from complications of cardiovascular illness, mainly from heart attack, stroke, and the other thing that's really common is heart failure. And that's kind of separate from hardening of the arteries. Things like untreated hypertension can contribute to heart failure, even if they don't contribute to hardening of the arteries.
Okay, so who's more at risk, men or women?
So, again, that's a story that's evolved over time. I think the classic thing is we used to always think of men as being higher risk, but really women are equal risk for cardiovascular illness. But they do have a little time preservation. You know, premenopausal women are very uncommon to have high cholesterol or high blood pressure. So during that premenopausal period, they are somewhat protected. But then after menopause, their risk factors kind of catch up over the next 1 to 2 decades. So 70 and 80-year-old women certainly have equal risk as men.
Is there something that keeps their cholesterol down then, premenopausal?
You know, probably it's related to the hormones and the estrogens and those sorts of things. You know, aging is certainly a powerful risk factor for everybody. But there is something after menopause that changes in the the metabolic matrix of most patients.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to take our first break with Dr. Christopher Howes, Chief of Cardiology at Greenwich Hospital. Just getting started, another edition of Spotlight of Medicine. Month of February is Heart Health Month, and that is our topic, heart health. And we'll be right back with more after this here on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Want an easy way to find a great doctor? Got a health issue you'd like to research? Looking for ways to be healthier and better informed about personal wellness? You'll find all this and more at the Greenwich Hospital website, www.greenhosp.org. This richly detailed website is loaded with valuable information. You'll find everything from directions and visiting hours to details about all the medical services and staff physicians, including doctor's credentials and office locations. You'll also find listings of community healthcare events, support groups, and much, much more. Whether you're planning a hospital visit or just want to be a more informed healthcare consumer, the place to start is Greenwich Hospital's website. Find it at www.greenhosp.org. That's www.greenhosp.org. Check it out today and get wise about health.
.908 here on 1490 WGCH, WGCH.com anywhere. I'm Tony Savino with Spotlight on Medicine with Dr. Christopher Howes, Chief of Cardiology at Greenwich Hospital, talking heart health during this month of February. All right, Dr. Howes, how does family history affect heart health?
Well, it's another risk factor, and sometimes it's a very powerful risk factor. So even if you live a completely healthy life, eat well, exercise, aren't overweight, don't smoke, you still have the genes that your parents transferred to you, and sometimes those are powerful for hardening of the arteries for certain, but definitely other conditions like atrial fibrillation runs in family, aortic aneurysm runs in family, and heart failure runs in family. So it's very important for everyone to know their family history as best they can. And a really common thing that we come across is that, you know, mom or dad dropped dead suddenly in their 40s or their 50s. And a lot of people assume, and it may have even been told, that, oh, dad died of a heart attack, a massive heart attack. That's not necessarily accurate. If he died at home and was found unresponsive, you don't know what he passed from. And that sudden death can be a risk factor for other types of death other than just heart attack. So trying to better understand what the actual details of your family history is helps physicians and healthcare providers narrow down on what things are risks for you. So a good history is one of the real good reasons to go to a healthcare provider to try to tease that out.
What would a doctor say to a patient who says, yes, I have, you know, my parents have a history of heart problems or heart attack?
Yeah, that's like, you know, what we do every day and try to understand what that is they're talking about. Obviously, if they had a history of heart failure, we'd be looking into those avenues. How is the heart muscle performing? How is their breathing and exercise tolerance versus someone who had a stroke? That's a different risk factor and a different set of issues that need to be looked at. So from the history, that helps guide us in the right direction. And then trying to figure out whether it's an irregular heart rhythm, a weakened heart muscle, or a blocked artery. These are all different kinds of problems that can happen to different individuals. And, mm-hmm. you know, obviously some people can have more than one problem as well.
And we'll talk more about blood pressure later on, but like you talked about stroke, is blood pressure also something that hypertension, is that genetic also?
For sure. And that's another thing to know about what your family history is. You know, some family histories, every single person in the family had high blood pressure. And, you know, with all the successes we've had in medicine, and, you know, if you come to the hospital today in 2025 having a heart attack, you are much more likely to survive that event than you were 25 years ago. That's a great story. But as a society, we actually have more high blood pressure in our society now than we did 25 and 45 years ago. As many as 50%, and in 70-year-olds, 75% have high blood pressure. So it's really it's its own pandemic.
Yeah. So while the success rate or percentage might be lower, the number of people dying might be higher because there's more people. Would that be right?
That's exactly right. And then, you know, the other powerful things that are moving forward in our society are the aging of our population, and that works for all these risk factors, and the obesity epidemic. We're still having a real problem as a culture and as a community of too many people overweight.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about blood sugar. Blood sugar, how is that related to heart health?
So blood sugar and, you know, the most developed form of insulin resistance and elevated blood sugar is diabetes. That's like our most powerful risk factor for cardiovascular disease. And most people with diabetes have complications of heart disease. And that is correlated to weight. People who are overweight have more insulin resistance and higher sugars and higher risk for diabetes. And that obesity and insulin resistant epidemic is moving forward. Then there's a whole thought of whether processed food promotes insulin resistance. It, you know, it's not just how much we eat, but the quality of the food we eat is really important. Fresh fruits and vegetables are still the best thing for you.
Mm-hmm. Are there differences to the threats to the heart health of type 1 and versus type 2 diabetes?
Yeah. You know, type 1 diabetes, which often occurs in children, is much less common. There's not much people can do to prevent getting type 1 diabetes. It's, you know, kind of a thing that if you get it, there's treatments for it. But type 2 diabetes is a much, much more common condition of people when they get older. And this is the condition that's associated with increased weight, poor kidney function, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. And it's a real constellation of risk factors that makes heart disease very, very common in patients with diabetes, type 2 diabetes.
You're talking about the fruits and vegetables. I've heard that the diet for a diabetic is probably the best one for everybody. Is that right?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's probably nuances. You have to look at everything for your own individual, but certainly trying to avoid saturated fat is a good idea. But trying to avoid, you know, simple carbohydrates, sugars, white flour, white rice, white bread, those are really bad for the insulin glucose metabolism, and they probably should be limited for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Speaking with Dr. Christopher House, Chief of Cardiology at Greenwich Hospital, here on Spotlight on Medicine during the month of February. It's Heart Month, and heart health is the topic. Okay, let's talk now the link between cholesterol and poor heart health, and how do I manage cholesterol?
So cholesterol is a very powerful genetic condition. People who have high cholesterol usually have it as a result of the genes passed on by mom and dad. But you can have dietary influences, and you can manipulate your cholesterol by about 25% with good dietary behavior. That said, patients who either have hardening of the arteries or have had stroke or heart attack, sometimes lowering the cholesterol 25% isn't enough, and that's where the medications come in. And a common misconception is that treating high blood pressure is actually hard for us to do. The typical person in America who has high blood pressure needs 3 medications to control the blood pressure, whereas high cholesterol is often very responsive to just 1 medicine, typically like a statin. And now there are several other newer agents in addition or instead of statins. But treating cholesterol in many ways is actually easier than treating high blood pressure. Both are very, very important for this risk factor modification.
Approaches to dealing with this from a non-medicine standpoint, that kind of thing.
You know, I like a lot of things in life, how much you put into something depends on how much risk there is. You know, if you're a 90-year-old and you have no cardiovascular illness, and, you know, you probably don't need to worry about your cholesterol at that point. You should just live a healthy lifestyle. But if you're a 40-year-old and dad died of a heart attack at 40 and your cholesterol is 260, you've got to really get serious about it. And certainly, for sure, for everyone, diet, exercise, and weight control are like the main cornerstones of approaching cardiovascular wellness and cholesterol management. And then either with some adjunctive testing, either, you know, a stress test, CAT scan, but mainly knowing what the blood test shows of the cholesterol levels and the fractions of the different lipids in the cholesterol, you can decide whether this is something primary prevention that we can treat with diet and exercise, or whether it's time for medicine. You know, that the risk determines how much you need to use something like a medicine in addition to diet and exercise. Mm.
I'm thinking about the saying somebody said, you never see any obese 90-year-olds, right? Or rarely.
Yeah, you know, nothing's absolute in this world, but there is some truth to that, isn't there?
Yeah. All right, we're going to take another break with Dr. Christopher Howes. He is Chief of Cardiology at Greenwich Hospital. This is Spotlight on Medicine here on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere. I'm Tony Savino. Topic this morning is heart health during February Heart Month. So we'll break, come back with more after this.
You make lots of important decisions for your family. But when it comes to health care, there's nothing more important than the doctors that you choose. So how do you make the right decision? Here's a tip. Check out the doctor's credentials and make sure they're from respected medical schools. And here's another tip. Look for a doctor who's affiliated with a truly fine hospital, like Greenwich Hospital. Greenwich Hospital is consistently rated in the top 1% nationwide for patient satisfaction. It has a broad array of specialties, from excellent women's services and breast care to pediatrics, orthopedics, extensive cancer care, and much more. Greenwich Hospital physicians meet the highest standards for healthcare excellence. For a referral to a Greenwich Hospital physician, call 203-863-3627. That's 203-863-3627. Greenwich Hospital, for the quality care you and your family deserve.
Coming up on 919 here on 1490 WGCH, WGCH.com anywhere. This is Spotlight of Medicine. Another 10 minutes. Turn things over to Joe Thomas at 9:30 and then Sportsline America at 10, Debbie Nigro at 11. On WGCH. Talking heart health with Dr. Christopher Howes, Chief of Cardiology at Greenwich Hospital. And we're just saying off air about a report, they come out all the time, it seems, if you look at the health websites or whatever, about flossing preventing stroke. What do you think about that, and what's the connection?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because that got news and is a newsworthy story, but I think it's something that the healthcare community actually knew already. Coronary disease and hardening of the arteries is a complex systemic process. And one of the powerful risk factors that we really haven't spoken about is inflammation. And inflammation can be a lot of things. You know, unfortunately, during the COVID pandemic in, you know, 5 years ago, 4 years ago, a lot of people were having a lot of inflammation, and we saw a lot of stroke and heart attack in that time because their immune systems were being stimulated. Well, you know, gingivitis and dental disease is super common, and that's a low-grade inflammation that adds to risk. And I'm not surprised at all that showing good dental hygiene lowers your cardiovascular risk.
Oh, I see. Okay, so it's that. I thought it had something to do with things that are in your teeth going to your heart or something.
Just, you know, that's like a really common, even you're a really healthy person. If you have like chronic gingivitis, you have like a low level inflammation, and that inflammation stimulates your system. Maybe your blood glucose, your sugar is a little bit higher to help deal with inflammation. There's different things like that. So turning off inflammation is part of what we're trying to accomplish for people for cardiovascular wellness as well.
I think with the usual yearly physical, they do it. There's a blood test that tests inflammation, isn't there?
Yeah. And, you know, they 20 years ago, there was an observation that even if you didn't seem like you had an active infection, if your CRP, your C-reactive protein, this is a test that looks at like the ambient level of inflammation in your body, that is a risk factor. If that's elevated, you are at high risk. And in fact, there's good studies that say people with high CRP, they do better going on lipid-lowering therapy. If you go on a statin, you lower your cardiovascular risk. It doesn't necessarily lower the CRP. It might, but it mainly lowers the cholesterol, and that lowers your risk.
All right, so floss those teeth, because there was a dementia, I think, component to that as well. So, yeah. You know. All right, let's see now. Let's get, what are the warning signs of a heart attack?
So it's pretty ironic on a day like today where the weather's terrible, there's snow and ice out there. You know, everyone has to pay attention. And the classic warning signs of a heart attack are pressure, heaviness, tightness, usually up in the chest, but sometimes up in the jaw or the shoulders, even into one of the arms. It doesn't have to be your left arm. It couldn't be your right arm. Those are the classic kind of pressure symptoms. But other symptoms that are a little bit more subtle but are still very common are just overwhelming fatigue, sweating and clammy and feeling unwell without like a localizing symptom, and then shortness of breath. And all of those are powerful risk factors. They're nonspecific. Obviously, you could be short of breath and feeling unwell because you have pneumonia. But it turns out for women, they're a little bit older typically when they have a heart attack than men, but they also have much less typical symptoms. So, you know, a 75-year-old woman, she's much more likely to have like indigestion and shortness of breath than to have pressure or heaviness in the chest. And all of those things, if you're not sure, if you think something's not right, get it checked out. That's one of the few things that healthcare does really well in America is it takes care of patients with cardiovascular symptoms promptly and quickly. What we need to do better is the prevention so you don't get to that point. And the last thing I just wanted to say was about the snow shoveling, because the weather's so bad today. Snow shoveling is really like the worst situation for people because they go outside in the cold weather. They don't warm up. It's not like going to the gym and doing exercise on your own pace. It's like doing heavy work. A day like today, even though there's only an inch or two of snow, it's that really wet, heavy snow. So the amount of workload to get it off the sidewalk is a lot. And that cold weather, heavy work without warming up, really puts too much stress on people. We unfortunately see a couple heart attacks every snowstorm.
Sure. So I guess either get somebody to do it for you or stretch out and warm up a little bit before
exactly.
You go there.
And, you know, a snowblower is better than a shovel, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you mentioned there are different, I think we've talked about this before, different symptoms for women than for men in some cases with the jaw and indigestion. That's
for sure. Yeah. And, you know, I 30, 40 years ago, we underappreciated women's risk. We underappreciated the subtlety of their symptoms. So we clearly underdiagnosed heart attack in women. And I think there's been a lot of progress in the American Heart Association. You were talking about its Heart Month and, you know, wear red tomorrow, February 7th. But the American Heart Association has done a great job to make awareness of women and heart health and the subtlety of their symptoms.
Mm-hmm. All right. We talked a little bit before about blood pressure. How do you keep the blood pressure at a healthy level? Yelling and screaming, is that good for you?
Stress is a powerful thing. And everybody, it seems to me, has stress and maybe increasing stress. And stress can manifest in different things. People with increased stress have increased thyroid disease, have increased immune conditions like arthritis, have increased cancer, but clearly increased stress is associated with increased cardiovascular illness. So trying to figure out a way to make your lifestyle lower in stress is a good start. In terms of treating blood pressure, exercise for maintaining fitness is very helpful. You can't like run your blood pressure down to normal, but certainly if you're overweight, a program of diet and exercise to keep your weight under control can have huge benefits for your blood pressure. Then in addition, salt, and there's a lot of salt in the diet. It's mainly from processed food, not from the salt shaker in the kitchen. That processed food with the high sodium content is a major driver of blood pressure in America, and limiting that salt can have very powerful effects. And parenthetically, instead of sodium, which is you know what salt is, sodium chloride, potassium, which is in fruits and vegetables, seems to counteract that. So a diet that's, again, rich in fruits and vegetables can sometimes counteract some of the blood pressure effects of the high salt diet.
How does the blood pressure and level of stress then impact the heart?
So that's a long-term situation. It's not like, oh, you get some bad news and you measure your blood pressure and your blood pressure is 160 over 100. That's not really what we're worried about. We're worried about day after day, week after week, month after month. It's making your heart and the blood vessels work harder. They're seeing the pressure, and that's a trauma to those vessels. And in response to that trauma, they harden, and that's the hardening of the arteries. And the most powerful risk from high blood pressure is stroke. That's really what we worry about a lot with people with high blood pressure. But also there's a risk to the kidneys, you know, kidney failure and need for dialysis. That can be lessened, the risk, by treating blood pressure. And then for coronary disease and heart failure and heart health, treating the blood pressure as well. So blood pressure affects all parts of the body.
You're talking about diabetes, obesity and stuff. What are your thoughts about these Ozempic and the Wegovys and things like that?
Well, they're certainly something we need to learn more about. They're very popular. I think everybody knows someone that's taking them, which makes sense. They clearly lower your weight in most people and are associated with lower risk factors, less diabetes, less high blood pressure, less cholesterol. And that does seem kind of early on to translate into lower cardiovascular risk. So that's all a very good story. But there's a part of me that's skeptical. You and I were talking how it seems like there's always a new story. Something else is coming up. You know, I think it's very early in the game of these Ozempic and Wegovy type medicines. And I'd like to see what, you know, the people who've taken them for 5 and 10 years look like then. You know, I want to make sure there's some long-term safety to it.
Mm-hmm. And aside from that, I mean, it's like getting out of debt, but if you have to cure the habit that got you there, right? And so it might be the same here, which kind of leads to the last question, improving heart health.
Yeah, I mean, humans have lots of stressors and pulls in lots of different directions. I think many people know what the right things to do are and live a healthy life, but then life gets in the way and sometimes you need some helping. And, you know, people that are smokers want to stop smoking. Some can, but others need nicotine replacement or whatever. Sometimes you need something to help you get there. And dietary consumption and being obese, some of that's metabolic. It's not just that they're eating too much. They need help to lower their metabolic relationship there. So I think it's important to identify tools that help people. But you're right. It's a lifestyle thing. It's a motivational thing. But in many cases, a medication to help get you there is what makes the difference.
Got to start early, right? Start with the kids.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, good, healthy dietary habits at the table and at the lunchroom. There's a, you know, big movement of trying to put only good foods in the cafeterias at the high schools and the middle schools and the elementary schools. But there's a lot of resistance to that. People still like their chips and pizza.
Yeah, got to live a little bit, but everything in moderation. Yeah. Except moderation, I guess the saying is, right? Mm. All right, Dr. Christopher Howes, good to talk to you. Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Make sure you wear red tomorrow, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that is Dr. Christopher Howes, Chief of Cardiology at Greenwich Hospital, joining me on Spotlight on Medicine here on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere. I'm Tony Savino, and stay tuned. We've got Joe Thomas, Sportsline America at 10, Debbie Niagara at 11 on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.